Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Linda's Lounge, Real People, Real Passion. And today we are going to be talking about spirit in transition. And today, as the guest on my show, is Reverend Arlene Riddell. She is a minister and also a psychic medium. And she's going to be sharing with us how people often are asked the question, when my loved one is in a coma or has just died, do they know I am with them? And can they hear me when I talk to them or say my last goodbyes? We're also going to be doing some free two-minute readings. But what I'd like to do, and I know we have a caller on the line, so we welcome caller from area code 858. Welcome.
Hi.
And your name is?
Michael.
Michael, thanks for being here. So what I'd like to do first is, before we even start any readings, and I'm not sure if our caller, Michael, has to leave or if he can be on the call for a while, but I'd really like to first welcome Arlene to the show.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for inviting myself and my spirit people with me today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. I know you're really busy, and this is going to be, as all the shows are really great, you know, they're just so different. So this will be interesting to talk about spirit and transition and what that means. But, again, I don't know if our caller Michael has any time, but what I'd really like to do is really kind of talk a little bit about the topic first, but first also sharing your story of how you really kind of got started in doing your ministry work and also being a psychic medium. I'd really like to have the audience kind of get a feel for how that all came about for you.
Great. I'm pretty low-key on this because I didn't come from a long line of psychics and mediums, so it was just really natural with me when I was born. I had a lot of friends. And even when I went to school, when I was 5 years old, they made a room for me at Sample Squaw Grade School in California. And I used to go eat lunch with my friends in the cemetery. It seemed very natural with me, and I would talk with my little friends and stuff until my mother asked me who I was talking to. And I said, well, my friend Heather. And she said, Heather isn't there. So I learned at an early age that I had to be kind of selective and I had to watch people's mouths move to find out if they were talking, and I would watch people's eyes as they moved around the room to see if they could see the other people in the room. Mm. So I had to kind of be quiet because it wasn't accepted in my family, and so I got punished for it. And I hid my gift a lot so that I could survive. We'll fast forward into getting grown up, getting married, having three children. And my husband died under very adverse situations. He was an alcoholic. He was a womanizer. And he had divorced and married again when he had a head-on collision and died. And I didn't think too much about it until my spirit people were interviewing me about good things to say about this man. And, of course, I said, I'll get back to you in a couple of days. And I did. I remembered the good things about him. And because of that, I got to witness this man go into the light, almost like on Ghost by Whoopi Goldberg. I was watching him, and the light from the darkness shone, and he was standing there in this beautiful white pants and white suit. All the horribleness of his life, the toxics, had left him. He was beautiful. He just saluted me and stepped into that golden light. And I said, you know, that was worth it, to be able to look for the good in this man. And then my grandmother died later, and I wasn't a favorite in the family. This is important because some of us, we don't always understand our role in the community. Right. When my grandmother died, I went to the mortuary and I did her hair because I had been doing her hair at that time. And yeah, I was able to love her with nobody else around, and she's a dead body. Mm-hmm. After she was buried, she stood at the foot of my bed and she looked at me full materialization. And she said, Arlene, I didn't know you loved me that much. Those words helped me, and it healed all that time of not being a favorite in the family. Mm. And then, so there's just been different things, and I found out how important and valuable it is to be able to give loving thoughts and loving words to people that are on this side of the veil. In 1991, I died in the emergency room. So I learned firsthand what it was like to be in a body that is, to me, I was active, I was looking around the room, I was talking, but nobody could see that. I could see the person say, my gosh, she's dead, run for the doctor, look through all of the material hanging in that room and see just exactly the doctor's running back, this shouldn't be, we gave her a shot. Both of my kidneys had seized. Mm. So I was on the table watching people yelling, don't put me in the morgue, I'm alive, don't do this to me, I'm alive.
Right,
and just
something you see in a movie, right.
Yes, and right. It was. The difference is the colors were not as bright. They were like soft blues and grays. There wasn't mm-hmm. the living color that you see when you're in your body. I didn't have any pain, but it was this watching everybody talking. And then they were working on getting me back into life. And fortunately, I was able to slip back into my body. From there on, what I decided is I need to do something with this because I know how frustrating. So I have gone to people's at the invitation of family members. I've gone to people's bedside as they lay in a coma and able to relay how they feel and whether or not they want to die. I've noticed that if people are escalating in their language, if there's any type of argument, too much sadness, it's real easy for that person to just slip away, just to go into that nice, comfortable, peaceful pocket that they're in. If people are talking about happy situations and loving this person and if the person likes to attend barbecues, they talk about barbecues and what they're going to have. And that person has to come close into their body and listen. And it gives them something to focus on to come back into the living life. So I do know from what I experienced and from what different people have experienced in that quiet zone that we do affect them and their need to live or their need to go. Sometimes the body is so damaged, it just can't come back. So when they are, if you're en route, let's say, you're en route to see your loved one and they pass away and people say, I wasn't there, how are they going to know that I loved him?
That
well,
my father, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well, what happens there, Linda, and everybody else, is we're not trapped in that body at that moment. See, we keep thinking of a living presence and a living life.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was, I could stand up, watch what they were doing to me. I could get back in my body. I could pace around everybody. I could move. I could go where I wanted to go at that moment when I wasn't a physical being in a physically living body. And so this is the key point that I found out, is that if you're thinking about that loved one, and you're connecting, and you're thinking loving thoughts, they'll come to you.
Mm.
And they watch you. And, and they will try to tell you. And that's why sometimes you might be driving along, and all of a sudden you smell a fragrance, and you say, mm-hmm. that's their cologne. They're trying to connect with you and say, it's okay, slow mm-hmm. down. I know you love me.
Mm-hmm.
You may feel a brush of air across your cheek. You may actually hear something.
Now, what
and
if
you
you're
may.
Out of town? Because in my instance, it was out of, you know, we live out of, I live in California, he lives in St. Louis.
There
it's
is
the same
no
thing, the
distance.
Concept. Yeah.
There's no distance.
Distance. Yeah.
There's only actually love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have seen that one woman was in transition, and I was called in by her daughter. The woman couldn't die. And she was down to skin and bones, and it was, she should have died. They couldn't get her to die, which sounds a little cruel, but she was in such agony, and they were putting more and more morphine on her. And so when her spirit and my spirit people were talking, it came up that she was afraid to go through the fire. So I'm asking the daughter, what do you mean by she's afraid to go through the fire? And she said, oh, in her belief, if you haven't led a really good life, you're going to go through the fire. And I said, well, there's no fire here.
Yeah.
So I went back and sat with her for a minute. She died within 3 hours because she didn't have to go through the fire.
Wow. That's
I have found people that have crossed over and felt that they had a concept of what's going on. And and people, they're so beautiful. You know, you just, Linda, you just have this great love for that sacred. It is sacred ceremony. But this one man was all caught up in a corner in fetal position, just absolutely frightened because it wasn't what he thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you just spend a few moments there and say, well, what do you want it to be? And they go, what do you mean? You can write your own script. What do you want this to be?
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, he was able to stand up. And then with authority, he was able to connect with his family member. But he was so frightened because he felt he had failed in all aspects. That was all he could do.
Now, he had passed, though, right?
He had already passed over.
Okay. So, okay.
But communicating with the people, they say,
right.
Well, can he hear us? Does he know we love him?
Right.
Well, let me find him. Oh, my gosh. He's scared.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And these are the things that, while they're in transition, they're still connected, even though they look empty. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
that's how we feel. We look at them, they're just not there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they really aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But they will come back for love. One of the nicest things you can do with someone that's in a coma and loving them, read to them.
Mm-hmm.
It gives their physical mind something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we are innately curious when we're in spirit. We really are curious people. So
yeah.
If you have family pictures, we're going to come back and look at those pictures to see how things are.
Yeah.
And even if...
I was going to say, I'm going to stop you right there because I'm really getting guided and I have a sense that Michael is not able to stay on the call. I'm not sure if that's correct, Michael, but I want to be sure because I just keep getting this feeling that you have a short period of time with us.
I'm actually
okay. You're okay? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you wanted to jump in there and ask a question. I just was getting a sense, and I just kind of felt guided, so I didn't want to take away from Arlene. I didn't want to take away from you really having this conversation with the spirit because it's really going really well, but I also...
Yeah, I'm actually enjoying it, so...
Okay, great. Okay. So anytime that you feel, Michael, if you have to go or something, please do kind of break in because I really I want Arlene to have the opportunity to really kind of share with us about the topic and really kind of what that means and how she got to this point. So I appreciate that. So if you need to break in, please feel free to do that.
Okay.
Okay, awesome. So I was going to, you know, when you talked about the spirit in transition, Arlene, when you, because there was a situation with a really dear friend of ours that his wife had passed all of a sudden and due to an aneurysm, well, she was in a coma. And so I was calling all of my friends that I know that can talk to the other side and anybody that I knew as a psychic or medium. And unfortunately, I didn't know you at the time, or otherwise I would have called you because you would have been perfect, you know, to really kind of have this information and be at the hospital with her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the things that I was asking him to do, because I kept feeling that she was in transition, not being really a medium or anything like that, but my sense was she was still in transition, that she really wasn't ready to pass. And a friend of mine had her husband do some exercises for her, and there was movement. After 2 weeks of having no movement, he saw movement. And the hospital staff was like, oh, that's normal for people who are in comas. And I asked him, I said, what was your feeling? Because you've been by her side the whole time. And he said, Linda, I know it was nothing. It wasn't just what they do. It was something that was different. It's almost like she's trying to tell me something.
Right.
And he didn't know what it was. But then he was so torn between religion and if it was Jesus who was talking to him versus someone who was a psychic or a medium, he could have believed it. But since it was a psychic or a medium, you know what I mean? So he was torn between that, and he ended up letting her go after a while. But, I mean, she was actually breathing on her own. So, you know, because my person that I had talked to that was able to talk to the other side said she was in transition. She was not ready to leave this earth.
Right.
So I think this is really interesting that you're saying that because, you know, from him, I mean, it would be great because she was young. She was only 35.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just find that really fascinating. And, you know, here she is a young mother of two children that are young mm-hmm. and passing on. And I do want to welcome, we have a caller from area code 614. Thank you, caller.
You're welcome.
And your name is?
My name's Patty.
Patty, thanks for being on the show. We're going to actually have Arlene talk a little bit about the topic and about people being in comas and asking questions, if you don't mind. I don't know if you're in a hurry to get a reading or if you can hang on to the line for a little while.
Just a few minutes.
Okay, Arlene, that's really kind of up to you if you want to take a few minutes and maybe do a reading for her, and because we're going to do about 2 minutes. And I'm going to do a timer because it's just easier so other people have the opportunity to also have calls. So
I would welcome the call. Hi, Patty.
Okay, awesome. All right, Patty.
Hi.
Your call for Arlene. I mean, your question, sorry.
Okay. Hi, Arlene.
Hi.
I have a father-in-law that is very ill, and he's had a heart attack and a stroke and possibly pneumonia, and he's not responding.
Okay.
And they have an
now,
infection.
Patty, I'm just going to jump in here and tell you that he is responding.
Okay.
And this is a thing that sometimes you don't see. He is not physically jumping up and running around. But you have to go in, and this is where I go in. I look at the cells in his body, and I'm looking to see if the nourishment that they're providing him and if the medicine is working. And so sometimes you can't turn a buffalo herd around in just a heartbeat. And this man is very, very ill. Now, while he's in the stroke, you can talk to him and give him an idea. You tell him directly, you've had a stroke. It has affected this part of your body, so that you give his mind something to do to work on to heal that portion of his body. You say that he had a heart attack. Okay, you need to, because he will connect with a loving voice. And so you give him instructions and directions on how to heal his body. While you're doing this for the heart, you touch the bottom of his feet, hold contact with his feet. That keeps him in his body while you're talking to him. Gently, not real hard, palm to sole of the foot, hold on to his feet, and you talk to him. Now, the pneumonia part, the medicines are working, but you see, you have three major systems going on. He is going to falter. There is going to be, a lower blip on the heartbeat. That's okay. The heart is cleansing and purging itself, and it's almost like something that gets like gas and water in there. It will skip a little bit. Well, he's okay. They're ahead of that. The team that's working on him is very advanced, and they see the fight in him. They know he wants to live. He knows he wants to live. Most important. So with gratitude, there's no one that right now he wants to join on spirit's side. So all you do is talk him back into his body and let him feel that it's okay. Take your time. Your body needs to have this R&R. Your job is to get well. You're going to find within 5 weeks' time, in 4 weeks' time, this is when they're going to get him healthy enough, and it does seem that there's going to be some heart surgery. It's okay. They will have him strong enough within a week's time. So mark it on your calendar. 5 weeks from now, this man can sing happy birthday.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Okay?
Patty, does that help you?
Yes, it does. Thank you so
great.
Much.
Great. And at the end of the show, too, or even if Arlene wants to give it now, you know, you can always go back and listen to the show once it's over and all that, and you can get her information at the end of the show because she will be giving that out to let people know how to get a hold of her.
That
if you want to know more or you want, there's other questions that you have for her, if you want to do a session, she'll be able to give that information out later.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for being on the show. I appreciate that.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay.
That was, you know, This is really fascinating because I think this is such a huge, you know, especially for people who have loved ones that are ill and not really knowing how to deal with that. And I think just what you had said to her by holding her feet and reassuring him and letting him know what's going on, it, to me, gave her a sense of, you know, that it's not the end. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. There's I noticed my son a year ago February was in a very bad dirt bike accident.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that too, yeah.
Yeah, he had 15% chance to live because he was really tore up inside. Now, what I noticed with him is that the minute anybody, because he was in a medically induced coma, the minute anybody would walk into the room, he had to, spirit-wise, identify, is this another procedure or is this someone who loves me? So as you enter the room, as you're entering gently, don't walk in with authority. You walk in and you say your name, hi, to the person you love. This so-and-so, I'm here to visit with you. I'm only going to be here. How long can you stay, you know? And so that they can relax their vigilance to protect their physical body. And it doesn't take up so much of their energy protecting themselves the minute you walk in.
But with authority.
That's right. And if anyone walks into the room that is negative, you have them leave right away. If they do not believe that that person is going to live and has there's no doubt in their mind, you don't let them stay. Not, you just have the right to say no thank you and don't come back. If they're having a conversation, and this is what my son told me, because he was at Desert Regional in Palm Springs. God gave him a miracle because they knew how to take care of his wounds. They were all real positive, as he can remember coming up and back and forth and listening to the laughter, listening to the kindness within everybody, listening to the upbeat conversation. When he was well enough, he was transported to a San Diego hospital. No disrespect. Good medical help. But people sitting out at the desk were talking about how little they were paid, how hard and overworked they were, and it just, you know, and they had so much to do. And here's this man fighting for his life thinking, well, you know, maybe I should just die so they won't have so much to do. I seem to be just one more burden.
Right.
So his wife went to the front desk and she said, you will monitor what you have to say, and if you won't, I will go to the supervisor.
Now, was
and the
she
people,
aware of all of this? Had you already been doing this work, right?
I had been doing this work, and this is the difference here, and I want to qualify this, because my daughter-in-law is very Christian, very strong Christian. And so while this process is going on, she is very suspicious of me. She's very cautious of me. And so I have to be very, very careful of what I do so that I do not upset her. But I did know that I was positive that my son was going to make it. And in doing so, the positive came because I asked God. I said, God, you have to give me a sign here because I'm emotionally involved here. That's the problem. I'm emotionally involved in here. This is my son. Let me know if he's going to live or die. And this was within a couple of days of him having this 15% chance to live. And this very positive, very beautiful message from God came back and said, yes, he will live and he will be restored. And so I held on to that message, and I would not hold anything else in my mind because I'd already been told from God. When my son gained consciousness again, they brought him up out of the medically induced coma. The first words out of his mouth were, I visited with God. When I was there on the desert, all of my pain went away. And Mom, I got to go sit with God. And we talked. And God said, you know, he said, Mom, I could see my body and I could see the color. It didn't look like me, but I knew it was me because of the colors that were there. And he said, but God said, he said, you have a choice, Ken. That's my son's name. You can go back to your body if you want to. It's going to hurt a lot and you're going to have a lot of explaining to do, or you can come with me. He said, Mom, it was so peaceful there with God. He said it was the colors of God. And I'm sitting there. And he had been, he's a believer but not a practicer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So, but if that experience he chose to come back. And he came back into his body screaming naturally. But he now does that. And he came back from that experience. And he tells people, there is a living God. I sat with him. And it's not what he was taught. It's not what somebody else says. It's what he believes from the inside out. And that's what he carries with him whenever he talks with people as he's rebuilding his life. And because of that experience, the blessing came into my family because my daughter-in-law looked at me for the first time. And she realized that I wasn't outside of Jesus. I wasn't outside of God. I wasn't Satan spawned. I wasn't there to harm the family because she saw the similarity. And my son and I talked about our experience. And it made a change in the family. And because, and one of the things it talks about, our family was restored. We were put back together because we were bound together again because of his experience in the desert. And that's been true. And sometimes people's beliefs, their faith, cause rifts in the family. And something like this will... God says, okay, we're just going to bring you all back together. I'll find something to get you all talking again and loving one another because that's what I'm asking you to do. And so now my daughter-in-law walks in peace. She's helping my son heal, and we go there, and I get hugs and kisses, and I get to see my grandkids, and I look at my son. And we talk about the three times while he was in his medically induced coma when he wanted to leave. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sitting there looking at him going out of his body.
And when he was in the hospital?
When he was in the medically induced coma, yes. Okay. And it was too hard to live. And he said, I would think of my children. And he said, I would see them crying. Mm-hmm. And he said, I knew they would miss me. And he said, and I remembered that God said I could come back. Mm-hmm. And he said, and I came back. Mm-hmm. And he said, but sometimes you get tired. And he said, Mom, you got to always think positive thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, you do.
Justin, so, you were so emotionally involved with because it was your son. Was that the reason why you weren't able to get the message from him as opposed to other people that you could stand at their bedside if they were in a coma and
yes.
be able to relate to them, talk to them?
Yes. When you're okay. involved, you're humanly involved.
Mm-hmm.
Even the even the more advanced that you are, you're pulling. You don't get into the universal flow. You try to take control of the outcome.
Right.
And that isn't exactly what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You're as a intermediary like I am,
mm-hmm.
when I come in, it is for the highest and good, and it is to balance the relationship between them, God, the family. What is supposed to be doing here? Just like my son said, when he sat with God, he had an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So when I come in, here's the opportunity. How much energy do you need to live? Or how much energy do you need, and these are my words, to be rebirthed into God's arms? Because it's a rebirthing.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we all know, when we're being birthed into this earth realm, there's labor pains involved.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some uncomfortableness for the fetus as it comes out to be received here.
Mm-hmm.
And so our body does go through some releasing ceremonies to be rebirthed into that pain-free zone of being in spirit. And that's a transition part, and that's where it is, to me, the most valuable to have loving people. If I have to address this, if you have a person sitting there at the bedside with a person that is trying to figure out how they can stay in their body or if they want to go, the transition point, they can hear their relatives trying to figure out what to do with the assets.
Mm-hmm.
They already know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so sometimes that's good because then the person will get angry enough, I'll show you, I'll come
right.
back. And the first
right.
thing I'm going to do is
exactly.
I'm going to rewrite my will because
exactly.
that's not who we are.
Right.
Or they'll just say, oh, I didn't expect it to be like this. And they just don't have the energy to come back because they feel so defiled is the word, defiled.
Mm.
And so save that till later, you know. But it doesn't matter because they can be gone from your presence 15 years. And all of a sudden you get a feeling, well, I want to know how they're doing. They'll come in. They'll talk about the grandbabies. They'll ask who's doing what. They know who's in spirit. They even know what you're wearing. They know what you did with the kitchen. Oh, you remodeled it. They know everything because it's just immediate with them. And so
it's
even
the spirit, because it's in spirit. It's, there's no time anyway.
There's no
time. Yeah.
That's right. And so they come in close to you because they're loving. And like people say, did they hear me? Yes. And they hear you now. Sometimes they will go on. And it was so cute because this one person said, well, I haven't been connecting with my dad for a while. And I said, oh, well, he's living in Chicago. He's only about 2 months old, but he's doing really well, and he chose to be a girl. That's probably why you can't. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, who's he with? And I said, well, this is a new family he chose. She said, oh, he was mad because the way we acted. I said, yes.
So now you're talking about reincarnation, because he reincarnated into another, back on Earth. As a
right, he came back in. And that's why sometimes you won't feel them around you, is they've chosen to start a new life
mm-hmm.
again in a different family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that didn't get too far off the subject. But
no, not at all, because it's still about spirit and transition. But when they're in transition, yet if they've chosen, you know, to stay in the spirit realm, you know,
right.
that's one thing. But then choosing to come back into the earth, you know, I'm not sure why all that is, but that can be another segment about that, you know, why, you know, souls choose to come back in. Is it to learn another lesson and so on and so forth? So, no, not at all.
I'd like to come back because you addressed Jesus, and I really
mm-hmm.
love to. I have studied so much about this impressive person, the life that he chose, and even in the Native American community, they respect Jesus because he walked the good red road. He wasn't the good red road means that he was a humble man and he was about sacrifice. He was about the people. He took care of everybody and made sure everybody was fed, saw to their needs, but he was a holy man.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read the text, and I have a book that says what Jesus said and the things that he did, and people laugh at, sometimes people in some of their religious teachings, they laugh at spiritual people, spirit like me, I'm a spiritualist, because we feel that there is life after death. We feel that we can't communicate with the so-called dead.
Mm-hmm.
So when I listen and I read about Jesus and the things that he did, he also felt that if a person was in transition, well, Lazarus laid in a cave, and he said, Lazarus, come forth. You know, get back in your body. Get out here. You're not supposed to die yet. He didn't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked with a child that wasn't there, but at a distance. And he just said, well, you know, heal yourself. Or he didn't seem to feel that he had to be in the same structure of the religious teachings that were in his community. He traveled and studied everywhere he could to learn and gain skills to better the life of the people around him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt if he could do that, I could do that. He didn't always hang out with the nicest people because they weren't the ones in the most need. You know, if I'm with someone, let's say at County Hospital that has one living person that cares about them, and they call me in. Mm-hmm. Now, there's nothing sensational about it. Here is a person that hasn't got very much money, but he has someone that loves him, or she has somebody that loves him, you know. But it's about that person, their life choices, and whether or not my presence can give them enough energy or give the person that loves them enough energy to make them stay in this realm if that's what they want to do.
Now, can you expand on that, what you mean by if your presence is not enough energy?
Okay. This is interesting because I've been tested by a lot of different people. They have me do these little tests to see what my skills are and if, in fact, they're valid. And but what they feel is that for some reason, this whole group of us, which you are included in because you do have strong intuition, and we can't let you negate that. So
are you talking about me?
Pardon? Yeah.
Are you talking about me?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Not too much gets by you. You won't call it being psychic, or you won't call it being
media.
But you got
like
your
I didn't
pulse.
Realize, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, you got your pulse on the heartbeat, and we'll call it the heartbeat of Mother Earth.
Okay.
So some of us, for some reason, we have the same magnetic energy as the Earth energy, and we can harness that, so we're kind of like Niagara Falls when it comes to energy.
Mm-hmm.
And because we operate out of love and because we understand and value universal source or infinite intelligence, God, whatever level you want to call, we know how to merge those two together. So we're like a walking wall socket. Mm-hmm. And when a person is willing to allow us to share our energy with them, we can recharge their batteries by just being there, just being present,
mm-hmm.
and supplying that peace. And that's where people really charge well, their bodies really receive well, is when you walk in with peace, mm-hmm. there's a knowing that settles over them. And it's like mother to children. It's like when mom walks in the room and tells you it's going to be okay, you know it. And it's her love when she touches you. But if you're sick and somebody walks through the door and says, you got to go to school tomorrow, so you better get well, and slams the door and walks out, you know, it's a shock to your system.
It's a little different. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it is. And so those of us...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, you go ahead.
No. Finish, please.
Okay. So these are the things that as we walk around, and there's a simple thing that I show people that to do, because I know one of the first things that you could kind of tell if you're a person with a love in your heart, you have healing energy, which is what we do when a person is in transition. We're healing one thing or another. We're healing this lifetime or the next lifetime. We're giving that opportunity. And so if your people want to do this, it's simple. If you feel that you have to touch someone to find out how they really are, you're sensing with your hand. You are tuning into them, and you're kind of running a test. See if what you feel is matching up with what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, okay, yeah, you're all right. Well, I don't feel good. Well, I know, but you're all right. You're going to make it. But if you take if those are the kind of people that are, I can't believe you're okay until I touch you. I got to hug you. I got to feel you. Okay, right?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take your hands and just rub them together lightly, if you want to do that, just rub them together lightly, just barely touching, and you feel a little warmth naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then you want to bring your hands gently apart and kind of cup them, soft cupping them. And you want to find that soft water balloon between your hands. Just that nice soft water balloon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most people have done that because we've had a little play outside on hot days.
Right.
But just that nice spongy little soft water. Find it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. Now, that usually indicates that you can bring up the chi or energy that can be used in healing, and you would bring that to the bedside of the person. But here's the fun part is you can expand that soft water balloon and you fill it up and you make about as big as a basketball. Mm. And so you find the edges of that. Just take your hands apart and just move them around like, you know, in the air. Make yourself look really weird. Find that hard basketball edge. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Find so it. Is it almost like envisioning and kind of sensing you can feel the energy in between? Is that what you're
giving your body permission okay. to release this energy out in front of you to work with. And see, but with a basketball, you can make the energy firmer or soften it down again. Firmer, soften it down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to have to understand the firmness, the feeling of firmness, because as you approach a person from then on out, your hand is sensitive to, oh, there's resistance. I need to stand further back. Or, in fact, then you can think to that spot on that person and say, we need to soften here, and the energy will soften. When you're carrying in flowers, you put that energy in the flowers because you want that energy there for the people. Now, we are energy. It takes a lot of energy to get born. It takes a lot of energy to die. Mm. It takes a lot of energy to maintain a body that doesn't know. It isn't in chaos or in transition. It doesn't know if it wants to stay or leave. So you're sitting there sharing this love, this energy, this chi, prana, ki, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. with this person. You're building up a healing environment, a safe womb energy for them to be in. And it helps them to feel safe and secure. And at the same time, they recognize your love. And it doesn't mean that you have to be a person that they know. It's universal love.
Mm-hmm.
And we help people. You can send it across the nation. You can send it around the world somehow or another, because it doesn't have to travel the way we physically do. We don't have to put it on an airplane and have it go through everything. We just send it, and the person receives it.
Right.
It's like, oh, I thought about you today, and I just felt so full of love.
Because it's an energy.
Because it's an energy.
Because we're energy beings, right.
Right.
Which, you know, really kind of makes sense. Yeah.
So we're going to come back to you in the car, driving, thinking about your father, not being able to be there, sending love, sending the energy. He was at a point where he could follow it back to you and find you with ease.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that morning when I got the phone call, because it's a long distance, you know what I mean, because he lives mm-hmm. another state. And
yes.
when I got the phone call, it wasn't even me driving. It was, well, actually, we had to end up flying out on the, you know, the airline that day. But,
mm-hmm.
I think I was just probably in shock, you know what I mean? It was more of not mm-hmm. thinking about it. But I'm sure that there was the sadness and stuff which translated to love. So,
yes,
you know, but I just think that's really interesting if you're not, because it does happen to some people who were, like with my grandfather, you know, on the way to see him, he's already passed. But I'm sure a lot of other people that are listening, the same thing, you know, or even being in a room and having that person be in a coma or, you know,
right.
maybe passing, who knows?
One of the quickest affirmations I had about that, the person laying there in a coma, this lovely daughter was, her mother had been in a coma for about 3 weeks, and they were putting more and more life support on her, and they were, you know, the prognosis wasn't good. So I was called in because she was getting ready to leave her body. And I came into the room, and I wasn't there very long. And I mean, it was mortuary music playing on this little radio, and it just really was irritating me. And it's not that I don't like mortuary music, but it was that's what came in my head. It's mortuary music. Get rid of the mortuary music. And I said, is this the kind of music your mother likes? She said, no, she likes the oldies. I said, oh, really? I said, well, would you put the radio station on the oldies? And she pressed, I guess the button went up for this one, and then it went down, and it was right, same click, and it was the music that this woman loved. Mm-hmm. And I could feel this woman sit up physically, you know, spiritually. I could feel her sit up, and she put a kiss on my cheek, and she laid back down. And then the girl was looking at me, and I said, your mother wants you to get up on the bed and curl up beside her. She says, oh, she says, I've been wanting to do that so much, but she said, we're in the hospital. And she said, that's the way we always did. I always cuddled up beside her. And I said, this isn't a hospital, honey. This is your mother. Mm-hmm. And so she cuddled up and curled up beside her mother, and there was so much peace and love in that room. And it was in, you know, within a day that the mother just simply stopped. And but she was so at peace. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just that quick where they're trying to tell you, I don't want to listen to that music. Or someone will bring them a flower that is not their favorite, or they don't like flowers. It's like, could you just get these flowers out of here? Gosh, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's kind of humorous, and you walk in and you start laughing. You go, this is not appropriate for me to be laughing right now. This is pretty intense. But that person laying there in transition, you know, and I would say something like, were they kind of they kind of like had a real good sense of humor,
mm-hmm.
you know, before they came in the hospital? Oh, yeah, they're always making jokes about everything. I go, oh, good. Okay, well, then, I hope you don't take offense, but, and they go, no, it's absolutely right. We, duh, we forgot.
Right, right. Well, it's good
yeah,
that you know that. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can sense that being the work that you do, you know?
Yes, yeah. So, but it is sacred ceremony, and this is something I would like, and it's not dull, and it's not somber in all cases. It is about being natural with the person that is there and knowing they're going to hear you and they're going to be more alert to what you say than they ever were before.
And so when you say being natural, it's like being really yourself as if they weren't. So it's doing the same thing that you would do if they were alive?
Right.
Okay.
If you're a happy-go-lucky person, please don't come in being somber. Because they're gonna say, oh, I'm not gonna make it. You're really serious,
right? But don't you feel that people are? I mean, it's you know when you enter into a room in a hospital, especially somebody in a coma, that your first thing is like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean? So I think this is really good because just to have
right.
people understand that that's not what you want to do, but that's what I guess society or that's what you've been brought up or however. Do you know what I mean? That's just the way it is. You don't walk into a hospital going, hey, you know. Glad to be, you know, you just don't do that.
Right.
But I think
you know,
what you're saying is so powerful that you would want to do that
yeah.
because of not knowing what they're, you know, what they're hearing or receiving if you're not, you know, a psychic or a medium or able to do that.
Right. Just be natural. Just
mm-hmm.
be loving and be natural. And, you know, because it's funny. Now, they're in a coma. And someone will come in that knows how to tell jokes and has that sense of humor that connects with that person in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just come in being natural. And you'll see twitches at the corners of the mouth of the person that's in the coma.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll blink open their eyes. And, I mean, they'll hear these real dark pupils are looking up. They look like deer eyes because they're so out of it. And but they'll open up and they'll look at that person. And then they'll go back. But they're recognizing that energy, and it feels so natural that they forget for a moment that they're at death's door.
Mm-hmm.
And it assures them they're going to be okay.
Right.
And this is why we have to be careful what we're saying, people in the room. You know, a lot of crying is awkward for the person. Now, there are some people, now we're going to go back into this, where they really want some emotion and some drama. So if the person laying there thrives on emotion and drama, give them emotion and drama.
Yeah.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
If that's what they expect, give it to them.
Because
mm-hmm. that's going to get them back. Otherwise, they're going to think, you don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life goes on. Oh, you guys are talking about what you're going to have for dinner, and I'm laying here dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but would it always bring him back, or like you had said earlier, it could be where that they can choose to come back because of the energy and everything. But also, if it's their time to go, it's more that they're able to leave at peace.
Yes. But again, see, you're bringing them back, that it gives them something to come back to. And, you know, and so those are those miracles that people talk about. The doctors say there's no way, just like with my son, there's no way that he should have lived. Mm-hmm. But because of the energy in his room and his commitment, like, I'm going to go back and I have a lot of explaining to do, he's back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I also want to talk about how he rebuilt his life, but I also want to ask you a couple other things. You had mentioned about healing another's lifetime. Healing, you know, another person's lifetime, what you meant about that. And then also about the other question would be about the negative people in the room. I mean, it's probably obvious now that we've really talked about it, so we probably don't have to go into that, because what you were just saying is if they're a happy-go-lucky person and you walk in and you're really negative, then there's that energy that's, they're like, ugh, you know.
Right. You know, I would have accepted this from anybody else but you, but I really must be in bad shape, you know, kind of a thing.
Right, right.
But, okay.
Healing another lifetime.
Healing another lifetime is that it gives them permission to disconnect from the family. They feel like, okay, I've done everything I can for this group of people, and I'm going. I don't have to come back and be involved with this family anymore. Or, again, as they are laying there in a coma, there's a little bubbling sound that the mouth makes, and it's almost like a little baby. You can almost see the little milk bubbles that
mm-hmm.
babies make.
Mm-hmm.
Well, adults will kind of make that while they're in that coma, and that's when the angels are present. There is just something profound about that particular sound. The angels are present. And this is where you can talk really strongly at that time about the goals, dreams, wishes of the person that is laying there in transition.
Now, how do you know the angels are there?
Pardon?
How do you know the angels are, and why is that at that time?
That's something I can't explain.
Okay.
But I can explain that there's just that little bubbling sound right there in the lips, and it's not an asthmatic wheeze, or it's not a lung bubbling sound or a gasping choking. There's just this little bubbling sound right there in the lips.
Mm.
And at that point, they're with the angels, and you can really do some strong healing work, because that's the healing team. The medical team is there. And there has been a miracle called for, and they're to help with a miracle. And so we're going to heal this life. If you are giving a person, and even if that's present, that is like anything to the power to the tenth. You're going to really get some real strong work done right there.
Wow.
But if you're in a room with a person, and just like we were talking with Patty,
mm-hmm.
and I'm saying that, give the person instruction so that you can heal their life, because they don't know what's wrong. They don't know what to do. The mind is still hooked up to the body. It is still receiving information. So they're getting a lot of procedures by the hospital staff. But you're standing there saying, okay, you have had a stroke to the right side, and so you'll know. So what you have to work on is, they're proving that the brain generates new cells, and it's almost like, it's so funny, because what I see is like electricians have a little thing that's like a wire, and it has a little alligator mouth on one end and an alligator mouth on the other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they call it. But they will hook that little mouth onto one piece of electricity, and then they'll bypass something that isn't working, and they'll hook it onto something else, and like, the brain does that. So if you're talking to them about they have a stroke and your arm isn't working, and then you say, I want you to go into your brain on the right side and have them start working on repairing all of those short circuits in your brain, and so that your arm can start getting a better signal. And I need you to work on your leg, your right leg. Oh, you don't know which one it is? I'm going to tap it. I'm going to touch it. Okay, I'm touching your right arm. You might not know it, but your brain knows that I'm touching. This is your right arm. This is what you need to work on. This is what you need to work on. The heart. Okay, you need to get your strength up. Or blood transfusions. People don't want blood transfusions. And so even when they're in a coma state, they don't really want to receive it. And they're like, push the blood out. And they just don't want to receive it. So you tell them that they need to receive the blood transfusion. And the reason it comes in is to give new energy to all the cells in the body. And it's to help you heal. And you need to know the blood is pure. It's a good match for you.
You know, say, why is it that people don't want blood print transfusions when they're in comas?
Or people, even before they go into coma, there's been so much worry about the blood donors and blood banks.
Well,
that
I thought that because I had a transfusion of three that were not mine, and that was,
mm-hmm.
and I was not in a coma, but after a surgery, and that
right.
was, I did not. I prayed like heck trying to avoid that, and it didn't get avoided.
There is so much information put out that you could possibly get AIDS from blood transfusion. The people that are selling their blood are alcoholics, or they have hepatitis, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a lot of that. That information that comes in sits at the back of your mind, and you say, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? What happens if?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have the blood labs, and I work with a lot of nurses and doctors, and they are screening the blood. They are purifying the blood. And so with authority, I can go in and say to the people, and we can now, too, that the blood is going to be accepted and received. This, just trust me here, Linda. There is in donors, in heart donors, okay? So we're preparing a body for a transplant.
Right.
They found out by accident in surgery that if a heart that has been harvested from the person that is in distress,
mm-hmm.
the living person,
mm-hmm.
and the heart that has been harvested from the donor sit side by side, they said that it's the most amazing thing. It's like their two hearts are talking. This is medically documented. And it's like the old heart is telling the new heart what it needs to do and to when it goes into the new owner. And they're having less and less rejection from organs by just doing that, putting them side by side.
Mm.
Isn't
well,
that beautiful?
It, since it is energy, I mean, you know, that you... You know, if they're donors and they're going back to the blood, if they're donors, and even in the heart, doesn't matter because it's still the energy. It
right.
could be the energy of a person who had passed along, and this person who needs a heart to live, the memories, because there's memories, you know, there's memories in the cells, are
yeah.
going to transfer over, you know, they're already in this heart, but they're going to, you know, be
perfect.
In the person who's accepted, who's taken on this heart.
Perfect.
Same thing with the blood.
Perfect. So as a person, you can heal their life and things that are going in the body, so you just let them know,
mm-hmm.
this is, just accept it, just receive it, because
mm-hmm.
it's coming in to help heal your body. There's no problem here.
Right.
And they can relax, as again, as you they come in the door, they have to find out, are you a procedure person or are you a love person?
Right.
So... What all are they doing to me? Because they don't know. They're laying there. They can't see
mm-hmm.
what is going on. They just know that this happens and that happens. And so
mm-hmm.
you say, oh, man, they got you hooked up. You're getting pure oxygen. Hey, dude, can I have some of that?
Yeah.
I want some real air.
Yeah.
So breathe in. Breathe deep. You know, get that stuff moving around in your body. You're getting
right.
some real good stuff there.
Right.
Okay. And honest to goodness, a lot of them are worried about messing the bed, messing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you're all being taken care of. You know, they got your plumbing hooked up here. You're not messing yourself. You're not embarrassing yourself. You know, you're doing really good.
Mm-hmm.
So by telling them, the person, they take control of their healing.
Mm-hmm.
And then even more gets done because they're not struggling.
Right.
They're not struggling. And even though They're there. They know what you're saying. They know and they respect your voice because you're not going to lie to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, how often do you get called into? Do you get called into just the hospitals, or where do you get called into? And when you say called in, I mean it's almost like it's like these people. Well, really, a psychic medium, the people missing children or missing body or whatever.
Right. Some people call me just on my contact phone number, or they'll email me that there's a situation, and we'll work through email. I work through phone calls. If it's a place that I can get to, and I go to, usually it's Wing C. C is kind of the terminal wing in some of these recovery halfway hospitals,
mm-hmm.
they're kind of in between.
Right.
They'll call me and I'll go there if I can and do some hands-on work or narrate what is going on there. I have been tested for remote viewing and I am a remote viewer, so therefore I can look into, if you give me a location and a site, I can look into it and then I will give you what I see, what I feel, what
and
is going on, and then if I can get permission from the spirit of that person to work with them, because I do have to have permission.
Mm-hmm.
But the spirit person is usually, they've already know I'm coming before I get there, if
right.
I'm going to whatever kind of work I'm doing. So it isn't, it's just like I was saying, they know at a distance who you are and what you are in their life. You don't have to be there at the bedside for them to know or value what is going on.
I think that's so cool. I mean, to be able to help, other people in any situation, whether it be in a coma or, like you said, in the remote viewer, I'm assuming that's when somebody's not in a coma or in a hospital, but they're out, missing person. Is that what you mean
yes.
by remote viewer? Yeah.
Well, I can sit here and see the person in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I can view what is going on. And I do understand that we're all energy, so I can energetically go sit with that person, and I don't have to be in the physical presence. But it's always nicer because then I can interact with the family by being able to be in the room. But that doesn't always happen. But we're not limited, any of us. We are not limited by our physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's called astral projection or something. I guess you have those terms. And you have to understand, I grew up, I didn't know terms, and I didn't know that there were particular people that did this thing, because I was kind of a hermit. I liked being out and away from people and with the animals. And when I was with people, it seemed like I was always with people that were really hurting and had problems. And so just like the wounded animals, I'd work with the wounded people. And then it seemed like I was always showing up where things were dying. And it was uncomfortable, but there was so much beauty involved. And it was just really, I don't know, sunrise, sunset. It can be absolutely the most beautiful experience to be able to be given this rite of passage. Or I love it when they wake up and they get well and I get to say hi.
Right.
I know the life, spirit life is beautiful, but I really like this earth life, and I really fight hard for that person to keep them in this life if that is the outcome that can happen. And that's why I do this work. But I also do this work for the people who have troubled hearts that really want to know, did my loved one make it to where they're peaceful? Are they happy? Did they meet with relatives? And sometimes they're so busy with friends and having reunions on the other side, they never get to the relatives. So it's just, again, and walking into a room where you have a lot of family and friends that are invisible standing there well, the person is making up their mind, but they're there for the energy. And sometimes it's just to say, no, you don't get to come. And I had this one man that was in the military, and he had, of course, war buddies that had been killed on site, but he survived. And in his grief, he was dying. And I walked in. I said, uh-oh. He said, what? I said, well, you've got this guy over here, and he's got his arms crossed, and he's standing. He said, oh, that's so-and-so. And I said, you've got this guy over here. I said, I don't think you get to die. So you better just make up your mind. He said, well, I thought they wanted me to go with them. I said, that's not why they're here. You're going to get punched right back into the body, so you better just start getting yourself well. And he did. It just was like, oh, okay, you mean they don't want me? Not now.
Right,
you got other stuff to do. Get well. You know, and the thing is those people, they want to have a body back, so you better get your body well and enjoy your life and live it for me if you can't live it for anybody else, because, you know, it's pretty nice to get to hug, and it's pretty nice to get to see different people changes, and you know, so that's why I do this work, is it's beautiful either way.
So did you really, going back to when you were in the hospital and you had left your body?
Yes.
And when you came back, I know you talked about that you knew that you were going to do this work, and prior to that you really had already been doing this and it was kind of different and things like that. But did you, at that moment, is that when you just really said, you know, this is really what my life's purpose is and my, you know,
yes.
'Cause I knew it was a passion, obviously, before that, but you made that choice at that moment to say, this is where I'm going to take my life.
Yes,
I mean,
it was the reason why, because I wasn't living one of those really good lives.
Right.
I was kind of having an earth life. Even though I was doing the different things, I was still, you know, doing earth life things. I didn't get to go see God.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that beautiful white light. I didn't get the angels singing. I didn't get all of that. It was getting pretty dark. I mean, I didn't get the hell and damnation and the fires that some people talk about, but I was just kind of like there, and it was just getting darker.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, uh-oh. I don't go. Help me here. And I did. I started praying with God, and I said, I'm going to change my life. And I did. I walked out of a very dysfunctional marriage, and that was part of the rift in my family. But I had to go do my work, and my daughters gave me permission to do my work. They supported me. They gave me a place to live, and then helped me get back up on my feet. And it took a little bit of time,
right. But
so I changed the direction of my life and the focus of my life. And it's not about me. It's about God and the relationship
mm-hmm.
she has with each person, and what can we do to make this the best experience in your life.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because we talk a lot on my other shows that about adversity and things that happen to you. And my question was going to be really is, do you think that this situation happened with your kidneys and
mm-hmm.
leaving your body due to your earth life experience? I mean, do you think like the universe or God, the I Am Presence, whatever you want to hire, you know, whatever you want to call it, do you think that was really kind of a message to you to say, you know, you're not doing anything with what you have, the ability.
Right.
We're going to have to kick you in the butt basically and let you have the experience of what you already knew on as an earth life, you know, physical being, have that experience to be able to go on this mission so strongly as you're doing.
Absolutely, because God became the most important thing in my life. It
was because
about
you prayed to him?
Yes.
Okay.
I was like, you know, yeah, please, I'll do anything. Just, and I was begging. In 1986, I was in a car wreck, and the seatbelt broke, and I went up under the dash, and I had a lot of trauma to my body. And so I was off of work. I couldn't work. And so it took me quite a number of years. In And through the healing process, I had a neighbor who took me to spiritual churches to have hands-on healing. I still wasn't using my gifts, and I still was reluctant because of this will sometimes isolate you, but there's more knowledge now because of the shows on television about
right.
the work we do and why. But it isolates you. It tags you as a person that is, you know, you walk into a room and you can tell right away, people with secrets, they don't want to talk to me. They don't want
right.
me around.
Right.
People that are open and receptive, I mean, we just get into conversations for hours. But you never know where you're going to go and how you're going to be received. You don't get to be in normal relationships because you're aware. I do flower readings. You hand me a flower, and I know what you were thinking when you got it, and the flower will tell me everything about your life.
Mm-hmm.
So when we walk this path, sometimes we are making a choice that it could be a path of isolation. In that path of isolation, I want to tell you, is a straight road to God. And if it matters more about what the people or the things that are going on beside you while you're going on this path, then you're not on the straight path to God. He will give you insight as to who to help, and he made my life richer and fuller than anything I ever lived. And I'm almost living a life as far as doing the work that I do that would parallel the work that the life I got to live up until I was 5.5 years old when my mother said, "No, you can't see Heather. She's not there." I had all of that freedom to work with real people, to work with spirit people. I was innocent. We sang, we danced, we played. We had all this kind of fun. Spirit people and I, we sing, we dance, we play.
Mm-hmm.
Human people, I watched them get their belief back. I watched them have the strength to continue on with their life. And I watch people in comas, and I get to look in something that is so absolutely beautiful. It's almost like I am the sonogram. I get to look at a person in a coma, and I get to see who they are, where they are, and what is going on. And I get to listen to the dialogue they have going on with God and the angels and the commitment that they've made in this life. And at the same time, I get to meet them on a survival level, whether or not they are loved enough, if they can come back, if the body isn't damaged beyond repair. Okay, let's come back. Let's bring you back. If that's what you want to do, I'll help you walk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's humbling because while you're doing the work, I don't feel it's me. I don't feel like me. And it's like painting a beautiful picture and you step back and you say, there's no way that could have come from me. It came through me.
Right.
And in being able to do that work coming through me is to me the greatest honor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so sacred.
Gift,
yeah.
Yeah. To be able to help other people, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I find it too interesting, you know, you were talking as far as about God and stuff like that, that, you know, and we've talked a lot about on different shows too about the I Am presence, which is really God.
Yes.
But and how that it is, it's the inner peace. I feel a lot of people, that's what they're really searching for. It's this inner peace. I know for myself, it's always feeling like it's being connected to that person. But it's not really about that person. It's being connected to my own self, which for me, in my own belief, is considered my God self. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, so it's not, like you say, it's not about that whole the outer, you know, looking to the outer, but it's really what you've been saying really is going within.
Right.
You know,
this one woman said at one time, she had been a Catholic nun, and she came out of the convent, and she became a spiritualist, and she also took Native American studies. And I said, what is your philosophy? And she said, you, meaning anybody, can do anything you want to do around me except you don't get between me and my journey to God.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I thought, was profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and that's where you're talking about. It's within. I watched the Moses Code, and they had
I bought the book. Yeah.
Good. Okay. And I got the DVD and the book. And but in there, they do this. The one phrase that they say is that I am that I am.
Mm-hmm.
They said about the comma, I am that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because it takes the judgmental side of ourselves and puts it further back into perspective because, you know, you can walk down and you go, whoa, look at that. Well, if you say I am that, comma, I am, then we all are one. And like somebody said, why should we get so upset with anybody around us? Because if you, in fact, understand our life frequencies, our life whatever, this reincarnation, we've been it all. So how can you point to any one person or any one thing and say, ugh, because that, I am that, I am.
If we can only remember that, Arlene, you know what I mean? It would be great, but it's just, you know, I think that's a part of a journey.
That's
you know,
a seed.
And that could be a totally another segment, too, in itself.
Right.
Just because
that's just a seed. That's a
absolutely.
Seed for life. Yeah.
Well, before we get started on and close, we got about 13 minutes. I greatly appreciate your patience, and I am, you know, loving having you on the show. And so I would love for you to have the opportunity, if you have a question, to ask Arlene, if you have a question.
I'm just listening. I don't know if I ever actually have a question.
Okay.
My grandmother died pretty suddenly. One day she was at the casino, the next day she was in the hospital and she had died. I was just wondering if she was doing well now.
Well, I tell you what, I've got this big old chuckle in my face here about this because it seemed like what better way could she go? She was waited on hand and foot because of being in the hospital. So she kind of like was in a day spa. Things were taken care of. And I hope you understand this way of her talking. And the casino was, you know, that's a good way to end a life, doing some things she did. Michael, you're the one, though, and she's pointing, and she's not scolding, but she said you're the one that has got to stand up for the richness in the family because you have it in your blood. You're the one that has her gifts and her excitement. So what you need to do, Michael, is your understanding and concept of yourself has been diluted or convoluted by other people's input. So what she's saying, and she's whisking you in the center of a bowl that she's making chocolate chip cookies. She hasn't put the chocolate in yet, but she's got that batter going, and she's swishing that around you. She said, you need to remember that you can make your life into anything you want it to be made in. Do you understand that this is the way she would talk to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. All right. Whoa. So bake the cookies. Get out of the dough. You're sacrificing yourself. Stop it. Okay?
Okay.
There's a journey. Do you wear a ring on your little pinky finger on your left hand?
No, not in a long time.
But you did wear one?
Yeah.
Thank you. Good, because that's what she's talking about, is that little ring on your pinky finger. Okay? Remember what you stand for, and the responsibility was passed to you, and you know that. What is the sequence? Because she's talking about turning off the life support. What happened there with that?
With my grandfather.
Okay, your grandfather?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. And did she's talking about suffocating, not getting enough air. So as she crossed over, was there a respiratory problem going on here?
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Okay. So.
And she was complaining of having heart problems.
She was?
Complaining of having chest problems. And
she did. It's okay. But she said, now, Michael, she's just saying it to you, and so everybody else quit listening. But she said, what's so wrong with Grandma and Grandpa having some frisky time now that they're free of the body?
Don't they always have a sense of humor?
He always did.
Did
yeah.
she? Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Good. Okay. So is she doing well? She absolutely is. And it's just a wonder that you would think about her because you have so much going on in your life right now. She's just patting her knee. So, you know, get in the flow, get in the rhythm, you know, get those feet dancing again and put the happy face on. And we expect to hear some real good miracles from you within 8 months.
Oh, really?
8 months. Mark it on your calendar.
Okay.
All right.
I have a question, if Michael, if you don't mind me intervening.
Sure.
When you had met, and I don't know, Michael, if you understood this, but it's really none of my business, but my question came up for me was richness in the blood. Do you know what that meant, Michael, when she...
No, I don't.
Okay, so that's what my question was, because I wasn't sure if he understood it, so I guess myself was asking it for him.
If he did his genealogy, or what do you call that? If you go back in your ancestry...
Genealogy?
That one? Yeah. Yeah, okay. You have... the richness in your blood. You come from people that build dynasties. You have richness in your blood. You are a manifester. You bring money. You can manipulate things. When you quit being so poverty-minded, you have richness in your blood. You can attract it, and you know how to use it right for the goodness of everyone. So allow that to come in. You've got the richness. It's just like her. If you need something, somehow or another, Grandma got it, got it. Got it. I have it. Yeah, give me a couple of days. I'll get it.
Yeah.
Okay. You have the same thing, only you have to turn the volume up and
mm-hmm.
do more with it.
Is there a way to practice that or?
Think it. And thank your grandmother for it. Think
and
it.
Okay.
And thank your grandmother for it because she gave it to you.
Yeah, it's almost what I get the sense of is him like, since he hasn't really, I don't know if you've thought of your grandma lately, but it didn't sound like you did. I mean, not that in a bad sense, in a bad way, but
yeah.
That now that you're aware and you've heard what she's relayed back to you, it's almost like feeling her presence or maybe having a picture around or something to remind you of this richness, of the specialness of this person that you need to carry on, sort of like a legacy. I don't know, Arlene, am I flying
off
the handle?
Perfect.
Here? Okay. That's my sense, is that it's almost like, because you were asking how would I do that, or, you know.
Yeah.
That would be, to me, is that just to keep remembering this richness in the blood, that there's this, you know, when you said dynasty, it almost sounded like, you know, what came up for me was like the pharaohs and all these massive, like somewhat of royalty or of... somewhat of a high importance that has something of worthiness, something to say.
Yes.
That people will want to listen to. It's almost like Jesus. When Jesus stood up, people were listening. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Even though he was not of richness, of the riches of the pharaohs. You know what
yeah.
I mean? If you
yeah.
looked at him, he was totally the opposite of that. But yet he was so powerful. Because of who he was and how he relayed that to people. It wasn't really about him, look at me, you know, look at me, look at what I can do, I can, you know, part this, you know, it wasn't all about that.
Mm-hmm.
What Michael didn't get in his year, you're about 26, 27 now, Michael?
10 years older than that, but yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to drop back then when you're 26 and 27 because you kind of dropped out. There's been this stalling in your life in between, you know what that's about. So if you will look back by building a dynasty or building a large structure as an overseer or as the keeper of the dynasty, you give opportunities to less fortunate people.
Uh-huh.
You never knew how to take the role of leadership because it just didn't suit you. So
yeah, it doesn't. Never wanted to be a leader or in charge or.
Okay, but do you see where you would be able to serve on a higher level and use your heart and your compassion for the good of other people that some people might turn them away? But
mm-hmm.
you see the potential in the future because you do have vision. And are you seeing colors around people or are you just seeing little orbs of color?
Colors.
Good.
More colors now lately.
Yes, okay, so good. So you will see this and you will feel it on these people that can offer a hand up to.
Uh-huh.
Okay, not a hand out, a hand up too. So, again, it's hard to pass your life out, for you right now, but the information will come to you. There will be people around, and I want you to start listening for the opportunity, because and that's why your grandma has you listening today. You're only a couple weeks out, and the door it's got a little WD-40 that's got to put in the hinges because it's a little squeaky because you haven't been looking for an opportunity. The opportunity is there, and it's going to just fit hand in glove with you.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm excited then.
Good. It's about time, too. Isn't that fun to feel your heartbeat again? Because you were giving up.
Yeah.
You're backing out. You don't get to do that. You're gonna back right into a whole bunch of sticker plant.
So
what's that thing
forward
to make?
Yeah.
You back up anymore, it's not going to feel good. Mm. Porcupine quill is going to get you. So go forward.
Okay.
No more. No more excuses. You've got reasons now.
Great.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Do you feel complete with that, Michael? Are you good with that?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well,
appreciate it.
Would like for you, Arlene, to give the listeners and how they can get in touch with you if you do the sessions over the phone. How they can get in touch with you to if they have any other questions, just in doing a reading or knowing about loved ones that have passed and so on and so forth.
Oh, I'd love to. And I have this really wonderful friend that made my web page. She's a webmaster, and I just love my web page. So I'm going to give everybody that.
Please.
So it's www.arlene, A-R-L-E-N-E, A-N-D-T-H-E, ANCIENTS.com. So it's arleneandtheancients.com. And on there, that has the contact form and the links. And or they can call 951-652-4204 to schedule an appointment. That is my daughter's office. Like I said, my daughter supports me in this. And so she gave me the fax line. So it will probably say Preferred Legal Solutions, but just leave a message and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. And before I thank all the callers and listeners out there, what is one thing that you would like to share or to let other people know, if you could say one thing, like a gem? What would that be?
Wow. Don't lock people out of your heart.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Arlene, thank you so much. Michael, thank you for being on the show, and I want to thank all the other listeners out there that were listening to today's show. And I really greatly appreciate you sharing your life story, the story of your son, your family, and also Michael, for you hanging on the call and really being and being present with us today, and having your life move forward and go on with that, and your grandmother coming in, and just everything that happened today. I think it's fascinating, Arlene, what you're doing, and I really feel it's an opportunity for people to be able to look at this differently when they are walking into a room with a loved one and really being who they are, and knowing that either way, if they choose to move on, that it's for the best, but both people are really at peace, the family and the person that's passing, or even to live. So yes. I thank you for being on this journey and doing what you do.
Thank you
very much.
Bye.
And with that, we'll continue next week. We have Dr. Costa next week, who will be talking about bringing world healers to remove self-destructive thinking from the collective consciousness. So, again, thank you, everybody, for listening today, and we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.